The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. I'm Vin Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health. Today we're going to be discussing a very interesting topic, weight neutral health, and our guest is eminently qualified to speak to the subject. She is Reagan Chastain. She's a speaker, writer, researcher, board certified patient advocate, and thought leader in weight science, weight stigma, and healthcare. Reagan utilizes her background in research methods and statistics and has spoken to diverse audiences from Memorial Sloan Kettering and Nationwide Children's Hospital to Amazon and Google to Dartmouth, Caltech, Cornell, and the Yale School of Medicine. She is an author of the Weight and Healthcare Newsletter, the book Fat, the Owner's Manual, co-author of the Health at Every Size Health Sheets, and editor of the anthology Politics of Size. Reagan is frequently featured as an expert in print, radio, television, podcasts, and documentary film. And in her free time, Reagan is a triathlete and marathoner who holds a Guinness World Record for heaviest woman to compete in a marathon. That's an amazing resume. Reagan, welcome to a Healthy Ulster Radio.
Thank you so much for having me, Ben. I'm super excited to be here.
So how do you actually find the time for the training and the conditioning required to do this among all of your amazing accomplishments and endeavors?
Yeah, it's just a time management thing. And I trained mostly at night, which I think was helpful and more fun. When I was training, I lived in Southern California, very near a beach trail. And so I would get to go at night and just train for hours next to the ocean, which is very cool.
Oh, how nice. Yeah, with all the other athletes who are in California.
Right.
So Reagan, in past and present medical research, literature, treatment protocols, weight has been emphasized as a key measure of health. And in the notes that you provided for this program, you described this as a weight-centric paradigm versus a weight-inclusive paradigm. Can you give our listeners a better understanding of what these two terms are in terms of their differences and why it matters?
Sure. So a weight-centric paradigm is the paradigm that we're in now. It's a paradigm where weight is often considered a proxy for health, and weight loss is considered a proxy for health improvement. And so everyone is encouraged to work hard to manipulate their weight, and particularly higher weight people. And in our current paradigm, it's not uncommon for being higher weight to be considered a disease in and of itself, regardless of actual health status. Whereas a weight neutral paradigm suggests that the focus be on supporting the health of people of all sizes directly. And the idea behind this is that, first of all, there are people of all sizes with the exact same health status. So we can have two people of very different sizes with the exact same health status. We can have two people of the exact same size with very different health statuses. So when we make weight a proxy for health, and when we make weight loss a proxy for health improvement, we leave out a lot of people and we mistreat a lot of people. And the paradigm as it is, this weight-centric paradigm has led to a tremendous amount of profit for the weight loss industry, which has been its primary architect, and a tremendous amount of stigma and pain and ill health for higher weight people who have been its primary victims. And it's led to a lot of disconnect between the healthcare system and healthcare providers and higher weight people.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like the very definition of prejudice, right? Which is assigning attributes to an entire population of people, right?
Exactly. To make assumptions about size or behavior based on health. I'll tell you a funny personal story. I went to a new doctor and he had said to me, you know, very seriously, it was just sort of the annual checkup, get to know you kind of thing. He said, I need you to do something for me. And it's going to be so hard, but if you can do it, it's going to change your life. And I was like, I'll bite. What do you got? And he said, I just need you to start walking 10 minutes a day. And at the time I was training for my first marathon and I had done 18 miles the night before. So I told him this, you know, at that, and this is what happens, right? The weight-centric paradigm really encourages healthcare providers to practice stereotypes instead of medicine. And so I told him, you know, that I had done 18 miles the night before. And he said, look, if you don't want to do it, that's fine, but you don't have to lie about it.
Oh my gosh.
And so that's when it goes from that implicit bias, right? That subconscious assumptions to explicit bias. And the weight-centric paradigm absolutely encourages that at every aspect.
So the weight-centric paradigm is, in a sense, one end of the extreme, right? One end of the extreme. And the other end of the extreme might be, you know, that weight has no role in one's health or wellness. Is there some middle ground there? Is there some acknowledgement that weight, in addition to diet, in addition to exercise, in addition to lifestyle choices and stress, is a factor? Or what do you think about that?
That's a super common question. I appreciate you asking it. So in the last 20 years, during which time I've become an expert in the research around weight science and weight stigma, health and healthcare, one of the things I have found is that there's this large body of evidence that connects weight with health. Right, that says higher weight people have higher incidences of these health issues. The problem with that research is that it fails to even typically discuss, let alone mitigate for, confounding variables. So we find that weight stigma is associated with those same health issues. We find that weight cycling or yo-yo dieting, which is the outcome of about 90% of intentional weight loss attempts, is correlated with those exact same health issues. In fact, Bacon and Aframore found that weight cycling could account for all of the excess mortality that was blamed on, quote, obesity in both Framingham and the Haines. And so one of the things that we have to do is be curious about that. And say, is it really that weight in and of itself, simply existing in a higher weight body, is causing these health issues? Or is it that the experiences that higher weight people are subjected to in a weight-centric paradigm are creating these health issues and creating a vicious cycle, right? Where our current paradigm creates weight stigma and weight cycling and weight-based healthcare inequalities.
Mm-hmm. But that's
and then
still...
the negative... Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead. Finish.
So... in our current system, we create weight cycling and weight stigma and healthcare inequalities. And then the negative impacts of that are blamed on higher weight bodies and then used as justification for more weight stigma and weight cycling and healthcare inequalities. And so what we have to do is ask, what would happen if we focused on supporting health directly? And what we find in research that looks at actual behaviors and how they correlate to health is that behaviors are a far better predictor of current and future health than is weight or weight loss.
Mm-hmm. So if that doctor that you mentioned earlier had stopped at take a walk every day and then you told him or her, well, I just ran a marathon, that doctor could say something like, that's really terrific because exercise is such an important component of one's health. That would be correct, right?
That would be better. Ideally, the doctor would have started with some questions. Right? Hey, are you participating in any physical movement? Ideally, the doctor would not have assumed that because I happen to be a higher weight person. And I prefer the term fat for myself. It's a reclaiming term. It's not everybody prefers it. But, you know, hey, just because this person is higher weight, I assume that they don't exercise. So we start by asking, are you participating in physical activity? And is that something you want to talk about? There are a lot of people who have a lot of negative experiences. I work with a lot of people who had real messy breakups with exercise because of the stigma they experienced, whether it was weight stigma or racism or homophobia or transphobia. And so from a healthcare provider standpoint, educating about things that support health is great, but also not making assumptions and asking for permission to talk about things that might otherwise complicate a healthcare appointment that was for something else. Right. Is the best practice.
So you can have like a yo-yo exercise scenario along with a yo-yo dieting exercise, both of which could be unhealthy, right?
Exactly. Exactly. In fact, Gazer and Angotti did a huge analysis and found that, in fact, cardiorespiratory fitness and physical activity had better outcomes than weight loss. And they posited that people might be more likely to participate in physical activity if they were told about the benefits in the absence of weight loss. Because what higher weight people get told is you should exercise because it'll make you thinner and that will make you healthier.
Yeah.
In fact, the benefits of exercise, like all health supporting behaviors, the benefits are direct. And most people will not experience significant long-term weight loss. And so, not surprisingly, they end up quitting because it's hard enough to make time to go to the gym, even when you think, you know, that it's going to help you, let alone if you think it's not helping because you're not losing weight. And so people disengage from something that could be an enjoyable health supporting behavior for them because of the weight centric paradigm and the way that they've been taught that movement is essentially punishment for or prevention of existing in a higher weight body.
Yeah. So it becomes really an anxiety producing thing instead of something that one looks forward to. Like I look forward to going to the gym because it's my time and I love it. And it reduces stress and it makes me feel so much better versus you should go because.
Exactly.
So Reagan, this is a fascinating subject and I want to learn more, as do our listeners. But first we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio and we'll be back after these words.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network's new Health Alliance Hospital is open in Kingston at 105 Mary's Avenue. The new hospital delivers on WMC Health's commitment to provide access to advanced healthcare right here in this community. Our comfortable and welcoming new Health Alliance Hospital has highly skilled doctors, nurses, and staff. We are ready to make your healthcare experience the best it can be. Here are just a few of the services ready to take care of you and your loved ones when you need us. A new emergency department with 24/7 triage for behavioral health needs, life-saving advanced cardiology programs, family birth center, private rooms, precise imaging technology, critical care support. And later this year, our inpatient psychiatry program will be reestablished to complement existing emergency and outpatient programs. Go to hahv.org for information. That's hahv.org.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on the Hudson Valley's Talk and Sports Network, The Beacon.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and today's topic is weight-neutral health, and our guest is Reagan Chastain. She is a speaker, writer, researcher, board-certified patient advocate, and thought leader in weight science, weight stigma, and healthcare. So Reagan, before the break, we were talking about what weight neutral, weight inclusive is and why it really it matters and how it manifests and what its connection is to optimal health and wellness. How did you become an advocate for weight inclusive health?
Yeah, so now over 20 years ago, I had actually been looking for the best diet. I had been yo-yo dieting for years. And my background, of course, is research methods and statistics. So I decided that I would do a literature review of the weight loss research to find the best weight loss method. And I cannot stress enough, I was not in school at the time. I didn't get credit. I didn't publish. I had a corporate job. This is just like the kind of mega nerd that I am. And so I did this literature review. And when I got to the end, I was so shocked by what I found that I actually went back and did the entire review a second time. And what I found was that there wasn't a single study where more than a tiny fraction of people were actually succeeding at anything approaching significant long-term weight loss, and that most people would lose weight short-term and gain it back long-term. And that was what put me down this rabbit hole of really becoming an expert in the research around why is this weight cycling happening? What is the alternative? And how has the weight loss industry, in ways that are almost impossible to overstate, infiltrated and manipulated the healthcare industry and public health in order to keep propping up a paradigm that's been failing for 100 years.
Mm-hmm. And really, you know, I worked in the advertising industry in New York, you know, where, you know, to put it very succinctly, the mantra was, you know, if you're not young, rich, and beautiful, you know, you're a worthless person, you know, mm-hmm. and buy this product, right? So in a sense, it almost feeds into that, right? I mean, very, you know, this image conscious society that says if you're not, you know, if you don't have the perfect body and the perfect look and a huge bank account, you know, too bad for you kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's it. That's what, you know, that was my diatribe.
Yeah. It's interesting because the weight loss industry started as a beauty industry. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear that the stereotype of beauty hurts a lot of people. So it's based in this thin, white, cishet, currently able-bodied youth idea. Mm-hmm. And I also want to point out that Black scholars like Dr. Sabrina Strings, Deshaun Harrison, and others have pointed out that weight stigma in general, the body mass index in specific, these things are rooted in and inextricable from racism and anti-Blackness. And so weight stigma will always disproportionately harm communities of color. And so when we talk about this stereotype of beauty, that's where the weight loss industry kind of started and got its hooks in. And then they realized, oh, there's so much more money to be made if we make this not just about beauty, but about the idea of health. And that's sort of the, in general, how we got here.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of public health messaging, not just public health messaging, but advertising messaging as well, can you provide an example of how public health messaging or advertising messaging would differ in a weight-centric versus weight-inclusive world?
Absolutely. So a particularly poignant example is around children. Right now, there's a lot of messaging about the idea of childhood, quote unquote, obesity. And so a lot of messaging is about, oh, we need to pathologize kids based on their size, and then we need to single them out and direct them into these intensive programs that do not have a good basis of research to show that they'll make the kids thinner or healthier. And so that's the weight-centric version. In a weight-neutral version, we would be focusing on making sure that kids of all sizes have access to environments and have access to the things that they need to be healthy and thrive. And when we do that, we, one, avoid singling out higher weight kids. And what happens is, the more you tell someone that their body is bad and wrong, the more they internalize that message, and the more that they start to see their body as bad and wrong and not worthy of care, and they disengage from self-care and from healthcare and sometimes from society in general. And so if we use a weight-neutral approach where we say to kids, like, your body is amazing and look at all the stuff that it does for you, and then we create environments and we create access so that they can support their bodies and so that they can learn to love and appreciate their bodies and see them as worthy of care, we can help kids of all sizes, and we can avoid harming higher weight kids by harming their relationships with things like food and movement and their bodies.
You know, it's interesting. I worked in the opioid prevention, I started the opioid prevention task force here in our county. And, you know, for the longest time, opioid addiction, substance use, was considered to be a character flaw or a moral failing, you know, versus an illness, right? And the result of that was, like, just, you know, feeding this downward spiral of people saying, you know, oh yeah, I must, enough people are telling me that I'm bad or I failed, so I must be a loser, therefore, you know, who cares if I do more drugs? You know, it's like that kind of paradigm that you were just describing with a young person, especially starting as a young person, because that sets the stage for the rest of your life.
Exactly. And it's a little different. It's a good comparison in terms of how it can impact psychology. I always do want to be clear that substance use disorder is different from body size.
Right.
But it's the same idea. If you keep telling a person that they're bad and they're wrong and they're worthless, they will internalize that message most likely. Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. will impact how they see themselves and care for themselves. And all of that can be avoided in terms of body size. If we just say, look, bodies exist at lots of sizes for lots of different reasons. And what we want to do is create a world where kids are, again, subject to environments. One of the things I think is incredibly important is to realize that health is not an obligation. It's not a barometer of worthiness, and it's not entirely within our control. It's this really gooey, amorphous concept. that in our culture, we like to act like is a neat, tidy definition that you can put people in and out of, right? Healthy, unhealthy. And in fact, at the individual level, that just doesn't play out. So if instead we focus on environments, we focus on access, we focus on education, and we focus on, especially with kids, but with people of all sizes and all ages, saying, look, your body is amazing and worthy of care, and let people start from there, I think we would see a huge shift.
Mm-hmm. And so for a higher weight person, what would you say to someone, say even if you weren't in this field, I mean, what would you say to someone, a friend, an acquaintance, someone you just met, or somebody asked you the question, hey, I am a higher weight person, but I want to make sure that my lifestyle choices include the things that have the greatest probability of, you know, optimizing my health and keeping me healthy throughout my life. Would it be the same exact thing you'd say to somebody who wasn't higher weight?
Yeah. Understanding that different things are appropriate for different people based on their circumstances. So there are people, for example, who are contraindicated for exercise. But in general, it's those things that we would recommend to anyone. So if we're talking about individual behaviors, we're talking about things like social connection, adequate and quality sleep, hydration, you know, perhaps physical activity, nourishment, all of those things. If we focus on supporting health rather than trying to manipulate body size, the research shows we can have really good outcomes. Now, again, everyone is different and their situation is different, so outcomes are not going to be the same for every person. But what the research shows, again, is that behaviors are a far better predictor of current and future health than is body size or attempts at weight loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at a board right in my office, the six pillars of wellness that was developed by a friend of mine who is a Navy SEALs commander and trainer. He's amazing, combines mindfulness and the six pillars of wellness: reducing stress, enhancing fitness and movement, better nutrition, sleep and recovery, time in nature and silence, and enhancing social associations. I couldn't have said it. That's to me, like when I think of like that, that nails it a lot, you know, pretty well.
Yeah. And if higher weight people were not constantly berated and constantly told to focus on their size, often in really unhealthy ways, right? We seem to have an idea that thin by any means necessary is better or healthier, quote unquote, than higher weight. And that's not what the research says or supports. And so I think, again, if we offered a world where everyone had the opportunity to see their body as amazing and worthy of care, and we talk a lot about body love, like within the fat acceptance, size acceptance, weight neutral health paradigms. But there's also the idea of body neutrality that I think is also important, right? That it doesn't have to be, I love my body. It can be, this is my body and it's fine. And it's the one that I got. And so we're going to move through the world together. But again, giving people the opportunity to not hate their bodies, giving people the opportunity to live in a world where other people are not encouraged to stereotype them, are not encouraged to believe without a good evidence basis, but even if there was a good evidence basis, to believe that they're a plague on society, to believe that they're the reason for, you know, other health, other societal problems, I think that would create such a shift.
Reagan, this is such a great topic. And unfortunately, as always, when we're having a great discussion, we are rapidly running out of time. So before we do, tell our listeners where they can learn more and get in touch with you.
Sure. So my newsletter is weightandhealthcare.com, and I write about these things endlessly. I do a lot of deep dive analysis, like, for example, into the GLP-1 research. And then for speaking, my website is sized, S-I-Z-E-D, forsuccess.com, and you can find all about my speaking there.
Terrific. Well, Reagan, thank you so much for being our guest and for all of the great work that you do. It's really terrific, and we really appreciate it. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye. Awesome. That was great, Reagan.
All right. Thank you so much.
I learned so much. That was really great.
Oh, I'm so grateful for the opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah, because, you know, it's one thing to just read over notes, and then it's another thing to hear a person who lives and breathes the subject to really explain it in a, such an accessible way. So thank you.
Great. My pleasure. If you need anything, or if there are like edits or whatever, let me know. I'm happy to help however I can.
Terrific. Thank you. Thank you for a nice meeting you. And it was a great conversation. Thanks. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Best of luck to your daughter.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.